We just wanna party.
This is Lee Hazelwood.
And Nancy Sinatra.
You know, some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna turn on
WGXC Macra, Hudson Catskill.
Hey, cowboy, where'd you get that funny hat?
90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Greenville Drive-In 32. A destination for movies and music under the stars of the Northern Catskills since 1959. Seasonal programming information at drivein32.com or 518-966-2177.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lauren Jones of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the Thingularity Radio Program, coming at you, blasting your earballs live from 65 West Bridge Street next to the Jews Branch in Catskill. How is everybody doing tonight?
Quite fine.
Here.
I'm here.
Here.
And I'm here too.
And we got no sound coming from Cody, who you just heard was
what?
Our Forgotten Geek and Brian. I didn't hear him.
Tap it.
Nothing. Yes. Hey, technical issues right there.
Right.
We go.
Welcome to WGXC.
Yeah.
You're not hearing technical issues. You're hearing live radio art.
A collaborative project in which technical monkeys bring things around until it just works.
We'll eventually produce some Shakespeare, but
might take 8,000 years.
Uploading energy drink. All right. Now, anybody bring anything to the table with them today? It's been, news has been mostly about the weather lately, so.
Oh, my God. The flooding? New York City?
What flooding? Who? What?
What, the 500-year flooding through New York City, the first flash flood warning ever. They call it 500-year flood. Just the remnants of,
Hurricane Ida.
Hurricane Ida.
Yeah, it basically turns all the subways into sausage.
It means a waterfall.
Yeah, just a meat tube.
Because there hasn't been any work I've read on it in like 100 years to prevent about this, and then Cuomo was like really screwing them over, so.
Well, it's.
There's not much you can do to stop a lot of water crashing.
The subways haven't been flooded like this since for 500 years.
Well,
about 500 years ago, I think there was an equivalent subway flood.
Okay.
You need a
that's just a statistical thing, right? That means every year there's a 0.2% chance that might happen.
That's 0.2.
Still, and now it's happening more frequently. The problem is the digits are coming closer together.
I know. Well, we had two 100-year floods in 2011 and 2012. We've had a 500-year flood in New York City now. So they have to redo the BS numbers.
As I was driving around the region today, I saw lots of creeks flooded over. In Columbia County, the river, or not the river, but whatever creek is running through Stuyvesant Falls there, that was raging.
Stockport Creek?
That sounds...
Or the Kinderhook Creek, one of those.
Probably
Kinderhook Creek.
I think the Stockport Creek. That's the one that empties out by the Stockport Flats.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't just that. It was up in Albany, then nothing was going on like that nearly as bad. It was mostly confined to Greene County and Columbia County. And there were, like, roads, creeks that were flooded higher than I've ever seen them flooded before.
Oh, yeah. As I'm walking here, I'm looking at, you know, our little creek here, thinking, yeah, another couple years, it'll probably be up to Main Street.
And this is where people start wondering why we have to worry about that 2-degree rise in global temperature. Because if you raise every particle in the world 1 degree, Fahrenheit even? Because Fahrenheit's a little wussy component compared to Celsius.
It's less than half a centigrade.
Yeah, it's a tiny amount. So even if you do it just that little tiny bit, imagine all the energy it would take to heat up each and every one of those particles. Mm. And each and every one of those particles is part of a large dynamic system. It's like a giant pinball game that's just being cranked up. You're just dropping more pinballs in there. So yeah, we're going to be getting more storms, more flooding, more tornadoes.
It's like we're already in the path. It's already been happening for a decade. But is that, you know, what part of that is random?
Define random.
Not random, but not so much progressive for global warming, but, you know, just other cycles that the Earth has.
It's actually a vicious cycle. So when the temperature goes up, it creates need to deal with increases in temperature that are triggered by the increase of temperature. An example would be that the tundra is melting, and that's releasing methane, which is 20 times greater in its greenhouse effect than the carbon dioxide. So all you have to do is melt the tundra to make the problem 20 times worse.
I was thinking also of the Earth wobble cycle, the 20,000-year cycle of the Earth wobbling up and down, which basically makes every 10,000 years, the Sahara is not a desert, but it's green and there's animals running around it and hunters.
So, well, no, there's a thermostat for that.
Well, the thermostat for that is the tilt of the Earth.
You can deal with the wobble. The planet deals with the wobble. What the planet doesn't deal with is the greenhouse gas.
Eventually it deals with it.
The dominant species doesn't deal with it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
What you're talking about is a closed system. What Tom's talking about is an open system that's accepting more input. It's got more energy rolling around than it did last year.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's open. It's a longer cycle. Like, the Earth has experienced thermal maximums.
Earth is in.
Every 50 million years or so, but you're talking like 13 degrees above what it is now.
Right.
But the Earth has a mechanism for dealing with that. It doesn't have a mechanism for dealing with the change in the atmosphere. So it's
just a vicious cycle.
You're so thermostat.
It will eliminate all the life on the planet, and then that life will stop screwing things up.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's not an open system. It's closed because 50 million years ago, when, for whatever reason, the Earth was releasing a ton of carbon, and it was actually releasing it about one-fifth of what we're humans are releasing right now. It did that for about 4 millennia straight and cranked the temperatures up 12 degrees, and it was really, really hot. So what we're doing it at an increased rate, but what I'm saying is
that's just
the Earth
activity
survives. The species that does that may not.
Yeah, the Earth
endures. the rock known as Earth will be here.
Yes, DNA it is
it'll take a massive
planet. If you look at Venus,
crack,
you'll get a pretty good idea of what happens when the greenhouse gases can't be rolled back.
Yeah, I want to add in the fact that because...
Oh, hang on a second. We should introduce...
We can't see you guys, by the way. If you guys
let's address some things going on
fix
here.
Fix your face.
Guys, stop sharing your screen. We want to see you.
Yeah.
Second of all, somebody introduce Dave, because he wasn't present
there you
the
are.
Moment.
Yes, these are technically our guests, Tom and Dave.
Tom and Dave, ditto.
Yeah, well, you know, I decided to pop in at this moment because, you know, when you're talking about the rate at which these greenhouse gases are rising and they're being created by humanity, the danger of that is the rate. When you talk about the event that was occurring over millions of years, now, the planet can survive that. Life can survive that because life evolves. It can adapt to that in time. But when you have the thermostat kicked up in a couple hundred years, you know, life has no chance to evolve in response to that.
Okay, so what you're saying is, to get you to participate, we got to be talking about something fun.
What?
No, I didn't mean to light you up like that.
That's no, this isn't fun. I can tell you that.
Oh no, I like that. That is like end game territory. That's like, okay, how do we avoid that? I guess.
Yeah, well, there are solutions.
Okay. Well, since I'm always trounced upon for bringing up eugenics, what else we got?
Well.
Well, one of the solutions that has been discussed widely is to decrease the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Another solution that I came across in working with NASA is I want to turn the sun down.
Okay, Mr. Burns.
Or sunlight, please.
Sunblockers.
Sunblockers.
And how do we do that? A giant sunshade?
Yeah. In essence, yeah. I mean, when I started working with this group, one of the bright minds said that if you put little bits of diffraction material at the first Lagrange point, which is between the Earth and the Sun, it'll redirect the Sun's rays away from the Earth. And the calculation was, if you redirect 2% of the incoming light, the temperature of the Earth will go down. Now, that particular mad scientist didn't take into account the fact that anything at the first Lagrange point is going to eventually fall back into the Earth or into the sun, but it doesn't stay.
Especially if it's like its entire purpose is to reflect light. It's basically going to get a constant pressure from the sun, and it's going to, no matter how big it is or how much mass it has, will act like a solar sail and eventually push out of that point.
Well, when they did the calculation, it looked like this night sky would be filled with little meteorites on a constant basis as these zillions of little bits of material fell back in there. And that wasn't a particularly good one. And then there are the flat earthers, if I want to call them that, because they're talking about putting up a layer in the stratosphere, which absorbed the sunlight, and it's
That's a layer. That doesn't sound smart at all.
What's it composed of?
I can see a mirror basically parked between us and the sun. Okay, there's a logic there, but if you're going to start doing this mad scientist nonsense of we're going to blot out these clouds, we shall make them dark. I know that's going to have consequences.
And then, there is a solution that I proselytize constantly and to the entire Twitch audience at this point. It is if you make a solar collector that either converts sunlight to electricity or reflects it back into the direction in which it came, so that it doesn't downconvert from the hot.
Ooh.
Energetic green that's doing all of this.
Yeah, that
energetic what green?
Well, it's the visible part of the spectrum that's doing all this heating. It does it because it hits the ground and turns into infrared.
Oh, and you want to what? Turn it into microwave energy, beam it back down to the Earth, and make it usable? Because that's
I want to send it back. Or convert it to something.
No, that's what the Chinese, they're already working on a space power plant. What they want to do is they want to capture all the solar energy, and they want to beam it back down to specific points on the surface using microwave energy. And the problem with that is that's going to be a lot of concentrated microwave energy, and people are worried that if they happen to aim it wrong, they could cook an entire city.
Yes, also they'll disrupt the atmosphere. So the two things are not viable. If it was used maliciously, it could do a lot of damage, or even accidentally. Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't hit the receiver. But
I baked New York City.
It'd be like burning ants on the sidewalk.
Yeah, with a laser beam, not a magnifying glass, a laser beam, like
a heat ray.
So the article that you pulled this from actually says that they would require more than 100 of their super heavy rocket launches. And 10,000 tons of infrastructure assembled in orbit
actually
achieve this.
They are working on it. They don't care.
How much rocket fuel is that?
The Russians have calculated that.
Does that even matter?
It doesn't matter to
like,
them.
I mean, really? Would it even be worth it?
Yeah.
If they did that many launches?
Okay, what's the worth? Is it just have a symbol over the rest of the world showing them that look at the awesomeness we have? That's worth everything to them. They will sacrifice hundreds of thousands of lives. Mm. They will sacrifice billions of what crappy, what do they use for currency over there? Yen?
Yuan?
Yuan. Yeah. Use it. Lots of it. They will spend American dollars to get that kind of like, you know.
And if you don't like it, here's a foot to crush your face.
Exactly.
Wow.
Okay.
Do you well, know how China
doesn't
works?
It's likely to me that they're going to block 2% of the sun anyway with that view. The mad scientist who wanted to put diffraction material in L in the first Lagrange point calculated that they would be launching rockets every 10 minutes for 20 years just to get that much material up there. He had some kind of magnetic rifle, some kind of sled that was
a rail gun,
free basically? Launch them, and then the rockets wouldn't have to be so expensive.
That sort of thing sucks on Earth, but on like
he wanted to do it in a volcano too.
Well, that makes sense. Number one,
the
volcano's got the inclination that you can use
accelerator gun shooting. Little bits of plastic into the second Lagrange point.
If you want
at this point, people have stopped listening to him. NASA kind of shut him down.
Okay,
and he's very
this
insulted.
Is not a bad idea. Basically, the design looks like a pinball launcher on a pinball machine.
A rail gun is.
It's
but
a rail.
What are
except
they?
At the end, the rail curves upward.
Right.
So that you're going so fast that when you get inclined upward, you can reach escape velocity.
Well, his rail gun was just pointed directly up. There was no horizontal part of it.
That's ridiculous. You're going to need a lot more energy than if you were just going to incorporate an orbital component.
Yeah, well, he was ready to
look,
bankrupt the world.
This ain't going to work on Earth, but something like that would work very well on the moon. It would work perfectly on the moon.
If you look at the percentage of the Earth that collects sun, almost all the time, and very, very rarely has rain or anything like that, the deserts, that's enough landmass to equal what's needed. So if you just had mirrors on all the deserts, it would cool the Earth like a thermostat. If you were clever about it, you would collect light with these mirrors and convert that to electricity, and you would be generating enough electricity to provide all the energy needed on the planet for the foreseeable future in the form of electricity.
Well, they already have.
If you use electricity for electrolysis, you could make lots of
hydrogen. They already have those projects. They're called salt towers.
Those are no good. The towers. No. The towers are just adding to the problem because they're getting very hot, and what we got to do is cool the Earth down. So the first directive would be cool the Earth down.
The second directive would be get what you can very efficiently
from this. So, even if you only got 10% or 20% of that energy, that would be more than enough to do everything that's needed when you have that much collection going on. So you have to design some kind of thing that's not just a mirror and heating up liquid metal or water, whatever they're using, those crazy towers. Those are very short-sighted, in my opinion. In the long term, we need to have
I have a practical question relating to what you just said about the mirrors in the desert.
Yeah, before we get sidetracked.
Don't deserts already have very high albedo?
Yes.
Okay, so why would we put the mirrors to increase the albedo of an already high albedo place?
Well, there's desert albedo, and then there's a mirror.
Yeah,
and
I know, but
there's a very significant difference between a mirror and something that's yellow. And in other words, some of the light that's striking the desert is making the sand very hot. You might have noticed that if you've ever walked in the desert, that the sand is terrifically hot. And that what you want is something in the desert when you walk underneath it. It's cool. And this isn't a surprise.
They
people
do that
in
the United Arab Emirates. They have cooled beaches.
They have cooled beaches in the UAE.
Yeah, they run. They basically run refrigeration lines under the sand.
Well, that's certainly not taking away from the climate.
Well, you know,
change problem.
Tom said we don't need to shift the heat around. Now you can move it with a heat pump.
Not like that.
No, I'm not saying
that uses more. That uses more energy.
If you put up something that reflects all the sunlight underneath that, it's cold because the sunlight. The only heat you're getting now is.
Well,
the
would that be more effective in a place
from Jason?
Would that be more effective in a place like I don't know, the jungles of the Congo?
How about on the surface of the ocean?
Well, you got to deal with the realtors. And the realtors that are dealing in desert make it more readily available.
Because there's no people there to complain.
They're also absorbing a lot of the carbon dioxide. So I think the idea is to...
Yeah, but they're also giving off water vapor.
Green.
What if we made a law requiring every roof to be white?
Well, you need 2% of the Earth's surface. So if you look back at the Earth, at the structures, it's kind of surprising how sparse they are in terms of landmass.
Okay, so the roads have to be white too.
Where does this calculation come from that you only need to redirect 2% of the sunlight of the sunlight that reaches Earth?
Well, okay, so in 2007, this came through NASA, but about that time I was at MIT, and they made a calculation that was surprisingly similar. And the argument was that if you use sunlight as your source of energy, it's adequate to provide all the energy needs of the Earth. And they were thinking in terms not so much of cooling the Earth, it's just providing all the energy. So their argument at MIT, at the lecture we went to, was that hydrogen would be the fuel. You'd have electricity generated on site and water, and then you'd make hydrogen and deliver the hydrogen as a fuel, but you can also have photovoltaics at the same time, and they could be providing the massive amount of electricity needed for relatively inefficient electrolysis. You might even say that the jungle is preferable because there's a lot of water. But you do have to.
You can go to can go to the coast in a desert country like, I don't know, Mauritania or someplace like that, and crack water there, you know, just crack
any of the Middle East
and desalinate water, right?
Mediterranean or the
you don't want to desalinate it.
Well, you could desalinate the water. You could crack it into hydrogen and oxygen.
The salt in the water actually makes electrolysis a lot easier. It makes it possible to do at a lower voltage. You need 40,000 volts to push through pure water, so you need to dope it with something. And salt's a great electrolyte, so. Problem with that is salt is ultra corrosive, so
it tends to speed up
the breakdown of the electrodes that you're using. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're using a platinum electrode, you just got to clean them off. So, drop a couple platinum rods in the ocean, put a capturing device over it, have Tom's solar panels float out over the ocean and reflect back some of that juice.
The ocean's available. In fact, that's not a bad thing. A little stability on the surface of the ocean is expensive.
Yes. Well, then you build little dynamos into the connectors between the devices so that it captures the wave energy, and not only does it turn that into electricity, but it will also reduce the impact on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
We will terraform the oceans. We will own everything.
We'll kill two seagulls with one stone.
Good job.
We won't need them because we will be growing their meat in a factory.
It might end up being more of a problem, but I do look at the deserts as being about equivalent to what's needed. And to do Google Earth over the deserts, what do you say?
So, are we just talking about the Sahara, or are we also talking the Gobi?
Gobi, the outback.
Does the Gobi get that hot? Or is it just that it's
the real? The real ironic twist is that the best site of all is the Sahara and the
all right, now I want to
deserts of Saudi Arabia and those countries that are now pumping oil. You know, you look at the countries that are pumping oil for energy for the rest of the world, and you say, well, you know, if they want long-term economic viability, this oil stuff is not going to last, and it probably has better uses. In fact, these photovoltaic panels could very well be made out of the plastic that's coming out of the hydrocarbons that they're pumping. So
yeah.
rather than throw it and burn it away, when it's a valuable limited resource, turn it into, you know, panels.
Yeah, it'd be smart to use it while you have it to do something smart like that instead of burning it up into the atmosphere.
Photovoltaics can be made out of plastic?
Yeah, sure. Plastic's transparent.
Not the best ones, but they do work.
Make the collectors.
Wow.
At the bottom of it, you need a reflector of some kind. So that you can't get out of plastic. But the transparent part of the plastic provides the
Mylars are pretty reflective.
Redirect the energy. You might note that the collector is small when you have a typical photovoltaic. If you do use collectors at all, if you concentrate the light, it gets very hot. And it melts the photovoltaic.
Yeah.
So what you need is some kind of optics that are wavelength sensitive, and then they are coupled with very efficient materials that have a band gap, as it's called, that is resonant with the unique wavelength that you're picking off. And there was a guy that designed all this stuff and patented it named Steve McGrew. Steve McGuru, he was my guru in holography. He taught me what I know about holography. And that was his first patent. He said, why don't we just selectively pick off wavelengths with the diffractive materials and capture them at a reasonable height over the collector. And the rest of it will just go back into the atmosphere. He didn't say that, by the way. That was my contribution to the conversation. He didn't think that anyone would take heed to the thermostat that I was talking about. But now,
and we're just talking about taking out the green frequencies.
No, it's the green is where most of the energy is.
So
blue is also very
expensive. I have a problem with the core concept. You want to cool off the deserts. Is this true? Yes or no?
That is true. Yes.
Okay. Now, what I want to do is bring in a climatologist to let me know what a cooling of the deserts is going to do to their local ecosystem.
Well, I'd like to talk to the climatologist and say, what could possibly go wrong?
What could go wrong? Yeah,
tons of dead desert animals, the flora and fauna.
And what happens when, you know... an adjacent ecosystem, you know, local, relatively regional, maybe,
like,
climate system is dependent on the heat that comes off of that desert.
Like grasslands and woodlands that are always surrounding the desert?
I don't know, man.
I mean...
Again, going back to
the
idea...
It would have a profound effect on
that
desert
the Earth... Earth wobbles every 20,000 years?
Something that
when
what?
You take
rather,
heat off of something...
Affected.
It
you
moves
know,
the monsoon.
It is already very affected. And like the Sahara is growing and it's in not habitable by most.
But the thing is, like, the Sahara, like the
it
Sahara
is sparse. It is sparsely populated. Yes, it
button.
Is populated by life forms that have adapted to it, but it is sparsely populated because it doesn't have much water. If you put water
it's
in the
not
desert,
sparsely populated, though. The deserts are thriving with life.
Amazing.
You're going to kill a lot of things with your project.
Yeah, but they're not nearly as many things as you're being wiped out.
We
by
don't need. Get, we
what
don't need
we're
lizards.
Looking at in terms of the heating of the planet.
So
in
hang
that
on,
case,
hang on, Tom,
you're
I,
having
you're
an
talking,
evolution
Tom,
where,
Tom.
Where life forms are moving from the south to the north.
Gonna have to do it.
And the north is melting, and like I mean, I don't want to lose the polar bears.
Hey, I just want to make sure that, you know. You don't talk over Brian because he's he has a pretty good point here, and I want to make sure it gets out.
Polar bears are cute.
Yeah, I don't know if he can.
I vote polar bear.
Can you hear us on the return?
Tom, can you hear us? Okay.
He can't hear.
Did I miss something that I should have heard?
Oh no, I was gonna say when you cool down a desert, like what the Earth does to the Sahara every 20,000 years. The monsoons move all the way up into it. So literally everything we do to terraform the Earth, including driving our cars by millions of cars, does something to the Earth. By rolling back, it does something. Everything we do does something. But the thing is, 6 billion people don't want to think about what we do even today. There is no solution if there are 6 billion unwilling members of the species. So,
which is why we blot out the sun. We blot out the sun and we starve them of their food.
Man. There is no.
Well, now I've gone back to my graphic here, which says, in the storm's wake, leaders acknowledge the need to confront climate change.
Yes, yes. Even the right's doing that right now because they're getting paranoid they won't get reelected in a year or two.
They have no choice, and they've watched their electrical systems fail.
So, you know, as much as I admire my pretty face on Twitch, I think this headline is historic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are moving toward willingness because, but we're doing it the way humans do.
Very slow.
Digging our heels
yeah, way
in
to
and
catch up.
And screaming the whole time. But,
and only implementing change as it fits the short-term conveniences of our situation.
Or long after it was necessary.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. Kicking and screaming and yelling at everyone else that, why weren't you doing that? Oh, my
sorry,
God.
I mean,
what was
there's a certain there's a certain consequence to being a flat earther or an anti-vaxxer, particularly anti-vaxxers, because they have a 90% more liability in terms of their health consequences. And 90% of the people dying from COVID have not been vaccinated.
Yeah,
so
well,
it's not, you know, if you want to, be a flat earther, you're going to have to pay a price.
Actually,
when you talk about vax, there are actually other things going on, including a as yet non-reviewed passive study in Israel, which shows that they're done. They have 70-something percent. Vaccination in Israel, and yet 50% or so of the people ending up in hospitals right
and
now.
And yet,
are
I need to chime
groups.
In and let everybody know that they're listening to WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Catskill, radio for open ears. And back to whatever the hell it was you were talking about.
Yeah, I got that. 70-some percent in Israel are vaccinated, and yet the breakthroughs are incredible.
Yep, that's why they're going to booster
Singapore
shots now
is
for everyone.
Beyond 80% vaccinated, and they've pretty much given up. So the numbers are different from state to state, I think, because people are maybe think they have a magic penny and they're vaccinated by 80% in a population that they're maybe acting a little bit more willy-nilly. I don't know.
Well, that's basically what they said, that if we just get to a certain percentage, X percentage, it'll be the silver bullet.
Yeah,
but it didn't work. Half of the people going into hospitals today are breakthroughs in Israel.
People like me all knew from the get-go that the percentages they were attempting to obtain were never possible. Yeah, well, not everybody is right. Because, look, when they said 80% of the population needs to be...
Are you saying you're right all the time?
No, I'm right about this. When they said 80% of the population needed to be vaccinated for herd immunity, I'm like, that's never going to happen. You'll never get 80% compliance.
And Singapore does have 80%, and they're failing at it.
Right, I mean, you know, you got to look at what kind of society you're talking about, and
because what
a
we're,
society like
what
Singapore can achieve that.
Is the complex immunity from people who have gotten coronavirus is a greater prophylaxis than our spike protein mRNA hack.
But you got to go through the first filter.
But you have to have
COVID first, take the chance of the complications from that. Once you survive that, you have a better chance than a vaccinated person of dealing with the Delta variant.
If you live.
Actually, you're saying that, but that's not necessarily true.
No, that's what's...
No. What I'm telling you is that there is a study out there that studied people who also occupied the homes and were also in close contact with people with severe cases and who did not also exhibit symptoms of the illness.
So what you're talking about is a natural immunity thing.
What I'm saying is these people were exposed to low levels, relatively low levels, however higher than what most people would be dealing with, who didn't get sick but still exhibited
symptoms?
A broad T cell immunity to the epitopes of the M protein, which is the membrane protein, the nucleocapsid protein, and the spike protein.
Again, a natural immunity.
People who
were
just
have certain kinds of
living with these people
in your throat. If you have these things,
so what you're saying is they probably caught it, were asymptomatic, and now have an immunity.
No, what he's saying is like some people literally have a natural immunity, and you don't know if you're the unlucky one.
Well, we knew this from the beginning.
Unless you run your certain tests.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did. We watched it happen. We watched people get COVID and have nothing happen to them.
If you look at the narrative that was pushed, that was not pushed.
That was
they called it novel. They said we are all equally naive. immunologically naive.
Okay.
Turns out that
they
not
never
true.
Said that to me. That I constantly saw people getting that were exposed to it, and we're like, we're that's the entire point of an asymptomatic spreader.
SARS-CoV-2. The name.
You're
was
saying
novel
they don't exist, and that was very clearly proven that they do.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't really want to talk about this anyway, so.
Yeah,
I said
I did not bring it up. I will.
It up, and I needed to verify there's other things going on about.
And the study we're talking about is very recent, and that's just the natural immunity to only Delta. Only Delta is the case that I'm talking about.
No, we're talking about natural immunity.
Now you
general.
Got Tau and Mu and all a bunch of others. We don't know what those are or how that affects
some
it.
Some people have a higher immunity, but they're now tracing it to certain parts of your immune system. We're finally figuring that out after. Well, the studies required people to die.
Here's a question. Has climate?
You need a control group, and you need to look at the data afterwards, and they're looking at it.
Has climate change allowed something like coronavirus to develop?
Possibly. They say the same about the Black Plague. Lots of rats, lots of fleas. Something spreads. I don't know.
But those rats and fleas exist because of
much to unravel.
Because of
too
humans?
Too much to unravel. I don't know.
Or because of, you know.
It's too much to unravel.
I was actually recently
yeah, that's too much, and you can't find the causality really well until.
And depending on what we say, you know,
we've been looking at zoonotic
on YouTube and whatever. So I don't really want to go any further because potentially we're going to get censored on YouTube.
Oh yeah, by the way,
so I'm not
by
interested.
The way, we can be watched on. Are we streaming on Twitch? What are
no.
we what are we streaming on?
We're streaming on YouTube.
Yeah,
Catskill Maker Syndicate. Go ahead and look at us.
We're streaming on YouTube. We're streaming on Restream
like
or something. It doesn't matter. If you're watching us, I do not care about you. I'm only here for the radio listeners. Those are the people that I cherish and care about. And the video watchers can all look at what I'm doing to them right now. I'm giving them a fun little salute.
Well, now we're going to get flagged.
Oh. Oh, well, basically, it's a game for me. I want to be able to get away with all the FCC rules on the radio and be nice about it, but I want to break every rule for YouTube.
Okay, that's not going to work out well for us.
Well, that could be done just by saying blood or crap or something. I don't know. They've gotten really weird lately.
What has?
FCC? I don't know. I've seen YouTube.
Oh.
Or like some people are now having to like go back and edit and like a censor blood and some darker, harder words. I don't know, and also had warnings beforehand.
Yeah.
The censorship of the soft nanny state. That that hasn't claimed statehood yet.
The stacks, the
multinationals,
the big tech. They got a little stick wedged firmly up there.
And hey, remember those are private corporations, and
crazy?
We don't like
that's
that is crazy
to put
in.
Regulations
worse
on
than
private
live
corporations.
Broadcast, which used to be like the standard for maximum censorship, and yet YouTube,
yeah,
is
well, you
beyond
know, they
FCC
keep
maximum broadcast. Censorship.
They keep adding things and cruft to their community standards guidelines, mm-hmm. and just
well.
Like.
Kind of gentler fascism works
teams.
In a different way when money's involved.
Yeah, because it's teams and teams of lawyers,
not just
hordes
lawyers.
Of them.
I want to give
lawyers and true believers and
yep, true believers.
I want to give a crap about what you guys are talking about. I really do. But
you
I
should,
really,
because it's censorship.
Yes, and it sucks, but
you
don't
like being censored.
I don't experience it because I don't participate in these platforms. I don't.
And what? thereby you make your voice smaller.
Oh, well. I'll be quiet in my nice little corner of the world that I don't go batty and I have lower stress levels and you guys have your
yeah,
world
yeah, I can
there.
Understand. I mean, I've pretty much almost abandoned Facebook. I'm not going to close it down, but I have not been on it barely like once or twice in the last month.
Sometimes
see,
I forget
wow.
that
you see,
exists.
You're just picked it to the crack. I never started.
Mm-hmm.
I never started smoking the crack. Or
no, I understand because it's like I'm seeing easy. People talk about Twitter and it's like, yeah, I was on there for like a week and it was just for the radio thing. And then they did nothing about all the hate, all the harassment Leslie Jones got over that, bad Ghostbusters movie. Yeah, maybe it was bad, but she doesn't deserve that. And I was like, yeah, screw it. I'm off of here.
Yeah, there you go. I have a Twitter account that
I mean, they only took Trump off because, to save their own asses. They didn't want to be implicated in sign an insurrection. So,
yeah. That's about right.
In fact, I think I just threw the A word, speaking of FCC.
Well, if anybody is still listening.
They don't really care about doing, because there's still plenty of harassment going on.
They don't really care.
I have a Twitter account for the sole purpose of selling it off. It is Paddle Me. So if you want paddle me as your Twitter handle, get a hold of us at CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com.
Wow. That's all.
That doesn't violate decency laws, by the way.
No, no. It's all me and my kayak. It's all me and my kayak with my paddle, so it's totally innocent and safe. But if you would like to corrupt it, please send me an offer.
Wow. Good job. Oh, my God. We got on a tangent there.
You don't say. You don't say.
Well,
that was a good tangent.
We're down a couple people tonight. We're just trying to fill space.
Oh, my God.
We're not letting Tom do all the heavy lifting for us.
Oh, boy.
So how about that fusion, guys? I mean, that's the next step, right?
Fusion.
Fusion.
But 20 years away, buddy.
They only get 3% back from what they put in.
It's always 20%.
Oh, wait. They just
got
70%.
It's an engineering problem. It's not a physics problem. Right,
but guys, imagine. What? Imagine that they get it. Just one day.
Okay.
That they do get it.
And then we can waste more energy.
And then I was going to say, yep, we're just going to expand our energy usage to match the ceiling.
As we were saying before, you have to have willingness from 6 or 7 billion diseased humans.
Who
are no smarter than a yeast. They just grow for no reason.
I have one
Give
small
them infinite energy.
Point I would like to make.
Yeah.
What's that?
Humans thirst for energy. No. We're sitting on top of nuclear reactors.
Yes.
Oil,
yes.
Solar, wind, mm-hmm. Hydroelectric, geothermal, you name it. We got all sorts of energy that we're drawing from.
Whichever you want.
And we're taking as much as we always can.
Yes.
Because we are humans and we always have designs for more energy. So here's how energy is just like driving a car. Out west, they're thinking about adding more highways in California. And the problem with that is the highway developers know that the more lanes you add to a highway, the instant you add them, the more cars there will be to fill it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the demand is always there and it's always full. That's how we are with energy. As soon as you're able to supply all the energy those grubby, greedy, crappy, stupid little humans want, they're going to do terrible things with it. They're going to use it against each other. They're not going to make their lives better.
Can I mine some more Bitcoin? Can I get Bitcoin?
That's what they're going to do with it.
So what you're saying is we actually need to evolve as a species. Our consciousness into a state where we're not just consuming endlessly, consuming indiscriminately and unstoppably.
We need to enforce strict draconian methods in schools to enforce that sort of evolution in people's minds.
Oh, in schools?
That's right.
What did school ever do to increase your consciousness?
Well, nothing. That's why they need to be modified so that they control
their minds. I know when the
minds.
Bell rings, I have to go to the next box.
Wow.
And then the next box.
And then occasionally stuff some food stuff.
In my face hole and then go to the next box when the bell rings.
And
that's
then
how
you leave
school.
Not knowing how to balance a checkbook or get a job.
See, it's funny because they did teach us that, you know, heck, I was in special ed, and they actually teach us how to do that balance a checkbook and some other basic stuff back in middle school.
Yeah, and I went to I took an economics course in school. Why? Because I failed Spanish 5 times, and they said economics was your only way out.
Yeah.
Fine.
How did you fail Spanish?
Because I hated school, and I did not care. I learned enough words to get me suspended from class. That's literally it. They had to write down what swear words I said and the translation for them and hand them to the principal, and I laughed the entire time I was in the principal's office. They taught me how to do this show.
Now Joe is a leader. Joe leads the Catskill Fakers Syndicate.
The Fakers Syndicate.
Oh, man, that's good.
Well, I once went off in class about having to read a boring book, and the teachers were really particular, because this is the 90s, about suck, you know, still thinking that was a bad word. So I got to hate the word inappropriate, so when they did that, I just said, suck, 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 threw the book up in the air and walked out of class.
That's how you do it. Wow.
And then my girlfriend told me later that everybody applauded and they had to stay over after 5 minutes.
Wow, that's good.
That's almost like almost like inciting a riot. That's like the school version of it. That's wonderful.
Corey, you're so mild-mannered and calm most of the time. I had never suspected you to.
Exactly. He was like, rah!
Well, yeah, that was back when I was really, you know, had a rage problem. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, it's now it's mostly under control. So
it's focused and directed. Yeah. So don't cross this man.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
He was a different man before he put on the mask.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Tom, I see you over there. You're looking like a... like Abraham Lincoln, all like you're on a Mount Rushmore. You have
yeah, I got this Nikon from someone
oh,
you know.
You're streaming out from Nikon. That's cool. I was wondering why it looks so good.
And it has this fabulous telephoto lens, which actually makes my nose
unfortunately,
when it's in this direction.
Currently, we're looking at you in like 240p, bud.
Reveal the truth.
it comes through.
I'm not Abraham Lincoln.
Oh my God.
Speaking of Abraham Lincoln, I don't know why that reminded me of it, but now the post office will be releasing scratch and sniff stamps.
Scratch and sniff stamps?
That's correct.
Man, we should figure out how to make those ourselves, but we should imbue them with the oils of Carolina Reapers.
So that people cry when they get our letters? I don't... like.
Wow.
And,
that,
and
that's
I'm
not
the,
right.
And I'm the evil one. That's dirty. They're gonna pick that letter up. They're gonna put it down. They're gonna go, what's that sweet smell? Then they're gonna pick their nose.
I'm just giving ideas for striking postal workers. Giving them ideas.
Wow.
If they're striking, meet our demands. They're not working to put the stamps on the thing.
Yeah. Any lists? What?
Yeah,
we got
know,
a history
like,
for today or this oh, month? Yes.
Oh, let's go for it.
Let's yeah, bring it up.
Somebody got something else.
Okay. Well, one moment while I kill for time. Okay. September 1st, 1869, Cleveland Abbey started a weather reporting / forecasting service in Cincinnati, Ohio. Next February, Congress authorized a federal weather service with Abbey appointed as chief scientist. 1914, the last surviving specimen of the passenger pigeon died at the Cincinnati Zoo, rendering it extinct.
The passenger pigeon?
Let's see.
That was an enormously populous group.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just they were everywhere, and then they were nowhere.
Yeah, it was that was part of the problem. They had traveled in huge herds, and it made it easier to kill.
Ah, I see.
Were people eating
flocks.
Them? Did they eat them? What happened?
I think they were just hunting in the extinction.
They just hunt them for fun.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, shooting rats, I guess.
Like those 60 million bison?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, precisely. Just
for sport.
Just you know, just taking a shot at them off from, you know, while you're traveling the train.
Yeah. Yep.
September 2nd, 1752. The Julian calendar in Great Britain, Ireland, and the UK's colonies marked its last day.
That was me.
The recently adopted Gregorian calendar skipped ahead 11 days, making the following day September 14th. September 3rd, 2000, NASA data showed the ozone hole at under 11 million square miles, the biggest to date.
Thank you, chlorofluorocarbons.
When
it's getting smaller, right?
Sorry, Corey, when was that?
2000.
But it's getting smaller.
Oh, yeah, it's shrinking.
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
We're fixing one thing.
Mm-hmm.
One thing.
One.
And that's
one thing.
September 4th, born this day in 1927, John McCarthy, American computer scientist and the father of research in artificial intelligence, coining that term in 1956. Okay. September 5th, 1977, NASA launches Voyager 1 from Cape Canaveral.
Still rocking.
Yep.
That, what, 20-ton thing?
Mm-hmm.
Still transmitting at 159 baud?
What?
Yeah, I know it's like on a, yeah, like
159 bits per second, something like that.
It's not even going that. It's not even that much data. It's past the heliopause. It's only giving back. It's only sending magnetic data. It, like they turned off most of the sensors. It's just like.
So maybe it's Voyager 2 that I'm thinking of. That's still transmitting.
Yeah, I think that was launched a month before.
Yeah, Voyager 1 was launched first.
No, it's weird. I think Voyager 2 was actually launched first.
But was it? I don't remember.
I don't know.
One over to the other.
Yeah, two way the farthest, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And one was discovered by the crew of the Enterprise.
And is now being assimilated by the Borg?
Yes.
All right.
And according to Word or the Great Bird.
Getting returned back to us.
September 7th, born this day in 1912, David Packard, American entrepreneur and electrical engineer. With William R. Hewlett, he co-founded the Hewlett Packard Company in 1939.
And now their legacy is making bad.
Yeah.
Bad laptops.
I know.
Or
I hate
okay,
them.
Printers.
Their first production
facility. Their garage. Their garage is a museum.
Yeah, because that's really? Their first production
facility. Their garage is a museum.
Was a small garage in Palo Alto. And their first product, a resistance capacitance audio oscillator, based on Hewlett's design. Although I still find them a little, let's see. 1936, the last known Tasmanian tiger died at the Hobart Zoo. Lots of extinctions this month.
Didn't they find one recently, or am I just imagining that?
There was something along those lines that, like...
Extinctions happen, they natural. It's a good thing.
Is it a re-evolution?
There were some. There was some kind of some Tasmanian species that might have actually not been dead, or maybe they were thinking about bringing back. Maybe that was it.
As long as it's not Cercophilus satanicus. Tasmanian devil.
Let's see. September 9th, 1926. Through radio stations brought from AT&T after they withdrew from radio, RCA created the National Broadcasting Company, NBC. September 12, 1793, an outbreak of yellow fever in Philadelphia led to Maryland Governor Thomas Sim declaring the first quarantine in U.S. history when he stopped commerce from Maryland to Philadelphia. September 13, 1898, Reverend Hannibal Williston Goodwin was issued a patent for his invention, nitrocellulose transparent flexible photographic film pellicles. 1 year later, he sold one roll for $2.50 to Thomas Alva Edison.
Nitrofilm.
Yep.
Very flammable.
Yeah.
1900, while investigating the transmission of yellow fever in Cuba, physician Jesse Lazier was bitten by a mosquito. His death 2 weeks later proved that the insect was a carrier of the disease.
Wait, he didn't become a mosquito superhero?
Now I think about that, has never been done.
In a manner of speaking, he did.
Wow. He became a legend. Just not the living kind. Okay, September 16th, 1884, ophthalmologist Carl Koehler became the first to apply cocaine as an anesthetic, using it for eye surgery.
Yes, right in my eyeballs!
1908. Excuse me.
It wasn't as pure back then.
Former carriage maker William Croppo Billy Durant founded General Motors in 1908. By the end of the month, they had begun consuming the competition, buying Buick, Oldsmobile, Cadillac, and Pontiac.
Wow.
September 17th, born this day in 1857, Konstantin Yarodovich Silikovsky, pioneering Russian space theorist who, while working as a provincial Russian school teacher, worked out many of the principles of space travel and also built the first wind tunnel. Let's see. September 20th, 1952, Alfred Hershey and Martha Chase published a report confirming DNA holds hereditary data. September 21st, born this day in 1971, David Vedder, who lived his 12 years of life in a sterile plastic bubble to protect him from infection due to being born with severe combined deficiency syndrome, SCID. He lived his last 15 days outside the bubble.
Before becoming John Travolta.
Yeah. And later inspiring a great Seinfeld episode. But yeah, the movie
from the 70s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one of the inspirations for the Bubble Boy. There was, like, another one. Yeah, of course, the Travolta movie, which there's a riff tracks of.
And then a comedy one later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah, but, of course, the movie is a total, Hollywoodization. Because, September 26, 1991. Four men and four women began a two-year residence in Biosphere 2, an airtight, self-contained structure in Oracle, Arizona, designed to replicate the Earth's environment, or Biosphere 1.
We talked about this before.
Yeah, it's come up before. Yeah, some of this is recycled.
We've been around for over 2 years, Corey gets to recycle some history.
I'm not going to do for a third time the story about...
2 years?
Yeah, but now we're heading into our third, so. Because, like, I think I've done, you know, September. Yeah, this is the third time I've done September. So it's like, okay, I'm not going to do, you know, Jon Snow discovering the cholera source of whatever that was again.
He'll save that for the next year.
Okay, and finally, September 27th.
Next year.
Oh, yeah. Here.
Sorry.
September 27th, 2003, the Smart One exploration probe, the first European mission to the moon, took off from the European Space Agency's launch center in French Guiana. And that's it for science history. See, this is part of also why I've started adding the born on this day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Born on
this day.
Oh, cool.
Because I've added a few, you know, I can't add a few new things, but.
You got some stuff to add?
Yeah.
What's up, Tom?
Tom.
Could I ask?
Oh, he's lying.
Could I ask Corey if he'd wind back to the nitrocellulose film?
Okay.
What was that? That he sold a roll of film to Thomas Edison for $2.50.
Yeah,
is that right? That patent and
he sold the patent
1898 for nitrocellulose film
pellicle. Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to add that he sold the patent to George Eastman for $1 million.
Yeah,
Eastman Kodak.
Because I think that come up. That's come up in a different scientist history.
And instead of having it on glass plates, once you could roll it up, you could put a lot of it in one little camera. And Eastman's brownie showed that it was worth $1 million.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. He did make he did make his money off.
So wait. So he sold a patent for putting this film on glass to Thomas Edison. But then,
well, let's see.
Sold the roll up to Eastman, just a roll of film.
No, he sold the roll and he sold the.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tom. In case you can hear us, you are breaking up. We're not hearing everything you're saying.
Right. Yeah.
So he just sold a roll, not the
roll film.
Yeah.
That was
a single roll of
and
film.
He's
roll
saying,
it up and put it in.
Eastman got the patent.
Yeah.
And that's why Eastman Kodak model. Became a company. Mm-hmm. Eastman owned the patent for film.
Wow.
But that particular technology was nitrocellulose. So when you ran it, when you put in a magic lantern or whatever, it would catch fire and it burned down movie theaters when you rolled it. So
wait, nitrocellulose?
Sorry.
Yep.
This was the early
gun cotton?
Yep.
It was nitro film. So, like, movie theaters in the silent era had to be built to be fireproof. Otherwise, you would kill 50 or 100 people.
Oh, that explains Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm.
So, the film that came afterwards, they replaced it with the acetate and polyester that doesn't burn when you get too close to the flame.
No.
It just melts.
Where's the fun in that?
But it doesn't turn into a flame.
Yeah, I think Simpsons also make fun of that. The episode where they find the true creator of Itchy and Scratchy, and the only proof burns up because it was nitrate.
Right, nitrate film.
Well, I think it's almost about time to wrap up.
It looks like Tom's connection got so bad that he disconnected.
Well, we're not just going to leave everybody hanging. Are we going to do an after show?
Yeah, let's just hang out a little bit.
We'll bleed into
an
after
hang
show.
Out.
Okay, so anybody listening to us on the radio, if you want to keep listening to us and our after show, you're going to have to go to the website, wgxe.org, click on listen, and you will find the Thingularity stream in the list of partner streams for WGXE. Thank you. And
if you want to see us, God help you. God knows why you want to.
God knows why you would.
You can go to YouTube search Casco Maker Syndicate, and our channel will be there with our live stream.
Yeah, you can see me as I get up, and you can see my pasty back as I get up and lean over.
In spite of all of my efforts, that stream is probably still up. Kill
it
the
is.
President,
that's what I'm
smoke crack,
you.
Worship Satan.
What are you doing? We're still on air.
Oh,
sorry. Sorry about that, FCC.
I did not mean that.
Oh, my God.
I didn't say which one.
Clown.
Well, it's 7:59, so thank you.
No, we're still on our bike. Okay. You've been listening to the Thingularity radio program broadcasting out of Catskill. This is a proud product of local Catskillians. So, all right, in a minute or so, if everybody kicks over to the audio stream, you'll hear us break out the drinks, unwrap the smokes, and have a little more relaxation time. Man, that minute takes forever to roll over, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just going to blast you guys with some music for a little bit.
Do it.
Sounds good.
Music up.